Mysterious Circumstances is an American Crimecast production. Remember, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey everybody, it's Justin from Mysterious Circumstances Podcast. Welcome to the show. I'm actually doing this recording before I start recording with Kimberly for today's episode. Because I had to get a lot of just acknowledgement for reviews out of the way and stuff, and give you guys some good news that I think you'll enjoy. First with the reviews, though, I'd like to say thank you to Spiff808. Excellent podcast. Said, absolutely love your show. Present the facts in a well-organized, systematic fashion that allows a listener to put together their own thoughts on each case prior to the theory section. It also goes on to just say, wish you could produce more shows throughout the week, but I understand that people gotta work. Yes, I do have to work. Keep up the outstanding work, and we'll see you on the flip side. Thank you very much, Spiff. I do have a bit of news for you once I get done with these reviews that'll make you pretty happy. Next one's from Dinglepud, which is a hell of a name, by the way. It just says, great show, and says, love to hear your voice. Cool, laid back dude. Maybe do more crimes of a sexual nature if possible. I look forward to hearing your show and glad that I subscribed. I will try to fulfill that request for you. Never heard a request like that before, but right now I work off a list of listener suggestions. Maybe one of these days here I'll slip one of my own episodes in and I will make it of a sexual nature for you. So next one's from Brady Redmond. Great informative podcast. It says, really enjoys the podcast. Justin seems to be a super down-to-earth, chill guy who's really passionate about these cases. And I am. Both of those. I'm very passionate about doing this kind of stuff. And yeah, I actually am a pretty fucking awesome guy when it comes down to brass tacks. So, yeah, I'm pretty chill, laid back, easy going dude. But we have another one here from the UK, which is from PlumDuff666. Says, thanks for creating this podcast, which I do enjoy listening to. Says, there's a great amount of effort in creating any content on a regular basis, especially when there's a significant amount of research. Yes, there is a lot of research in what I do, but I'm totally okay with that. They actually go on to suggest that I drop the casual swearing. PlumDuff666, you bring up a great point. I'm actually, after the new year, going to try to grow this podcast and broaden my listener base. So you will probably not hear as much swearing. I gotta do what I gotta do to get more listeners. And on another good note, let's go through some other reviews here before I talk a little bit more about that. But these are from the Facebook page that I've totally disregarded up until now. This one is from Mayoka. I think it's Mayoka. I'm not 100% sure, but it just says, great podcast, love the relaxed approach and style. And thank you very much for that review. Next one was from Christine Lauren. Says, interesting content. I enjoy that you change it up. And I try to. I try not to stick just to, you know, murders and disappearances, which I don't know. I like keeping it out there a little bit. Next one's from Robert Peters. It's a fairly long review, but he says he listens to a lot of podcasts and says mine's at the top of the list and he enjoys listening to stories that he's never heard before. So, you know, I try to do that. I try to get, you know, more of the lesser known stories, and if there is a story that I do that has been done before, then it's usually because I wasn't satisfied with somebody else doing it. I had to do it myself, or it was a listener suggestion. Next one's from Kristen Grell. I hope I pronounced your last name right. Says she was excited to find the podcast, an avid fan of mystery and true crime. Says she was starting to get tired of hearing the same old podcasts and all that good stuff. And says she loves my voice and tone, which It's unbelievable to me, but thank you very much. I greatly appreciate that. Next one is from Janilyn Prude. Says, this is a refreshing look on how a podcast does. He states the facts, conveys the story, and what you decide. Theories are not outlandish. It says I'm original and is always always himself, which I try to be. I'm not going to come out here and put on a fake front for you guys. Next one's from Jennifer Cook. It says, I like the fact that you're not polished. It says the stories are interesting, and it's cool that you take the time to research the stories. Thank you very much, Jennifer. I greatly appreciate that. Next one's from Jeff and Brandy, which Jeff left me a review on iTunes as well, which I greatly appreciate. If any of you can go to iTunes and leave reviews, that really helps me get out there a little bit more. But it says they love the pod and definitely make sure to listen to every episode. Whereas with some of the other true crime podcasts, it says they pick and choose, which I greatly appreciate. Next runs from Tanya Spears, a girl down in Arkansas. Says she loves the flow, very calming tone. I like that you spend time to research and not just opinions. Totally rocks. Glad I found it. And sets her cup of tea. And Tanya will actually be joining me next week for an episode, which will not be a murder and disappearance. It'll actually be a somewhat paranormal episode, which I am really, really excited to do. I'm actually pretty happy about that. I think that'll be awesome. Next one's from Maria. Maria says, great podcast, interesting content, well documented. Keep up the good work. And it says, greetings from Italy. And hello, Italy. Thank you very much, Maria. I appreciate that. Next one is Dana Carter. Says, well researched, very laid back, and well done. And thank you, Dana. I appreciate that immensely. Jim McDougal, he didn't state anything, but he left me a 5-star review. And thank you very much, Jim. I greatly appreciate that. Now that I've ranted for about 7 minutes or so, I do have some news for you guys. After the new year, I'm going to start doing weekly episodes. Some of them might not be like an hour, hour and a half in length, but I'm going to put out a quality episode every single week. And on top of that, my friend Lacey, who is a listener, has helped me design a new logo for the show. And I will be putting that out probably a little bit later tonight, which I am really excited to do. So pretty pumped about that. I saw it and I was like, this is perfect for the podcast. She did a phenomenal job. And what we're also going to be doing here is, after the new year, I'm going to start doing merchandise. There might be a premium content episode mixed in with all that stuff. If the premium content episode, you know, which means you would probably have to pay like a dollar or two for it, I will guarantee it will be a long episode. It will definitely be worth the money. It will be a big case, and I already have one in mind for the first premium content episode. And gonna be designing t-shirts here pretty soon, probably some short sleeve shirts to start off with and see how that goes and all that good stuff. So with all that being said, I'm going to go ahead and get off here and talk to Kimberly, and I'll be back with her.
His job was to help safeguard his country, working for the security services, cracking codes. So how did he end up dead, locked in a bag in a bath?
I think the big clue here is there's no forensics left around the bath surrounding it. So the bag's in the bath, there's nothing on the bag, there's nothing.
His family believe the dark arts of some security services may have been involved.
I think there's a possibility that there's been some kind of cleanup or cover-up by MI6.
Today, the coroner said, on the balance of probabilities, Gareth was killed unlawfully.
Our grief is exacerbated by the failure of his employers at MI6 to take even the most basic inquiries as to his whereabouts and welfare.
The investigation will now refocus and actively pursue all the evidence heard and all the new lines of inquiry.
But will we ever know what happened to the MI6 officer from Anglesey?
Hello everybody, this is Justin with Mysterious Circumstances Podcast, and as you just heard, I went through some reviews There was actually one that I had forgotten from Australia. It was CAH Australia, who gave me 5 stars, and I appreciate that immensely. I'm glad you like the podcast. Since I pre-recorded all that other stuff, it is time to get on with the episode. And with me today is Kimberly. Kimberly, you want to say hi and introduce yourself a little bit?
Hi, my name is Kimberly. I'm a mom, a wife, and a foster mom, and I like listening to podcasts about murder and such. I don't know what to say about myself. I'm not a very interesting person.
None of us are. That's why we get into this shit. But all right, I'll go ahead and get us started with a little bit of background. Gareth Williams was born on September 26, 1978 in Wales. He died supposedly on August 16, 2010 in Pimlico, London. I think that's how you pronounce Pimlico. His body was not actually found until August 23rd at 4:40 p.m. is when police actually discovered his body in an MI6 safe house. His body was actually shoved into a red North Face bag and placed in the bathtub with a padlock over the zippers to keep it closed. We'll get more into the details of the crime scene and how his body was laid in there and all that good stuff here in a little bit. Just to tell you what kind of person he was, me and Kimberly were talking about, he actually started high school a little bit early, and by the time he was 17, when he was graduating high school, he had a first class degree in mathematics already. He later went on to get a PhD at the University of Manchester. Later on, he went to work at the GCHQ in Cheltenham, whatever. I don't know. The English have some seriously weird words, but no offense, all you British listeners, because I love you guys.
It's like Cheltenham.
Cheltenham? Yeah, that sounds about right. And I feel bad talking about like their town names, because literally London, England is my most downloaded city of everywhere in the world, which is amazing because they're just so tiny. There's just a tiny little country. But
I'll appreciate that.
I know. Chicago's like right behind him though. Yeah, he went on to work at GCHQ, which was, I already forgot again, Kimberly.
The Government Communication Headquarters.
Yes. He was, and that was in about 2001.
That's like the NSA.
Yeah, it is comparable to like the NSA, just some security. I imagine this might, yeah, it's some kind of security firm. I kind of looked into him a little bit, but not too deep, just because of the fact that there was so much other stuff going on with this case. But
there is. I thought with all the rumors and everything going around, that I want, you know, people to know that this is like an actual person that we're talking about.
Exactly.
And just try and look at him beyond the rumors. Like he was saying, he was a really, really smart kid.
Really smart guy.
He was a really smart kid, a really like smart adult. He was a genius. He was approached by the security services at age 21.
Yeah, I forgot about
when
that.
When he was working on, the postgraduate work. And so he ended up getting his top secret clearance.
Yes, he did.
And so he was trying to be the postgraduate and work for the GCHQ at the same time.
Yep.
And depending on the sources, he either dropped out because it was just too much work, or he dropped out because he felt like they couldn't teach him anymore at the school because he just knew it all already.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was reading too.
At the GCHQ, he intercepted and decoded signals intelligence. And what did you say? You told me what the actual...
Oh, he was a code breaker and crypto analyst. So he was supposedly at some point in time, I know for 3 years, he was actually operational active operationally active for MI6, and which is, I believe, also known. I don't think they're two separate entities. I think they might be, but the SIS, the was it Secret Intelligence Service, and MI6 are those are two different branches.
From what I got, like the Secret Intelligence Service is kind of like the incumbent. It's like the big main thing, and then the MI is military intelligence. Like, I could be completely wrong on all this, but this is what I got from like a quick overview. And each number after the MI is a different department.
Okay.
So MI5 is with intelligence inside of Great Britain, or, well, if it's London, I don't know about the whole Brexit thing. I don't know who's all involved.
Who's all together now?
Whatever area they cover, it's inside that area. And MI6 is for foreign intelligence.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
And outside of the country. And so basically, Gareth was, he was a middle ranking technician. So he wasn't like super high up, but he wasn't down at the bottom. And he worked with a lot of sensitive information. And theoretically, it could have brought him into contact with enemies of the state.
Yes.
The GCHQ, where he worked, gathers intelligence from Europe, Africa, and Russia, and it also partners with the NSA in America.
Yeah.
So he had access to British... I'm reading something like a quote here specifically, because I couldn't put this in my own words because I would mess it up. he had access to British and European signals traffic at Menwith Hill, a top-secret RAF base near Harrogate in Yorkshire. So when he arrived there, it was shortly after the invasion of Iraq in March 2003.
Oh.
And the GCHQ and NSA, they were trying to focus on threats of the Islamic violence home and abroad. And so I guess he was helping them go over the chatter that they picked up on the landline, satellites, and mobile phones, and of people or anybody or anything that has contacts or is linked to Pakistan, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, and Dubai. And he was working on software that would help search and analyze the data in figure out patterns and meanings.
That's pretty damn interesting.
One cool thing that he had done, if I can just find the right paper here, he worked on, you can edit this part out while I'm looking for what it was called, because so he started to go higher up in ranks within the GCHQ when he helped figure out something called the liquid bomb plot, where a bunch of British radicals of Asian origin were going to detonate homemade explosives on 7 flights to major North American cities. And so the interception of the emails and phone calls pretty much cut this off at the head. And so during this time, he was flying back between the UK and the US at Fort Meade, which is, I guess, the NSA headquarters in Baltimore. So because of that, he was brought in to close proximity with a lot of Islamic radicalists and Middle Eastern agents. It brought him into contact with Russians. And this all plays into theories coming up later on.
And he had recently returned from a trip to the U.S. Before his death, didn't he?
Yeah, he went to DEF CON in Las Vegas, which is a underground hacker convention. Where you learn how to hack. I didn't delve too deep into that.
It's probably a good idea you don't.
Someone had claimed that one of the things that was being taught there was like how to pick locks, but for like an underground hacking convention, that just seems kind of
off a little bit.
Yeah, seems a little menial or remedial for it.
Yeah, you would think so for sure. And I did read that he was actually excited to be operationally active because it was something that he had wanted to do, and he was learning a lot about the quote-unquote black arts. But as for what he knew, it's hard telling. I mean, when we start getting into some of the facts and theories, there's at least one story I read about him. Yeah, I don't know. Like, me and you were talking yesterday a little bit about it. There's a lot of misinformation about this on there, so you got to be careful what you read. You know, take what you can with a grain of salt, because there's a lot of misinformation out there and a lot of stories. Because as we get into the case and some of the evidence and some of the theories and facts, you know, there's a chance that Gareth Williams might have had a few skeletons in his closet, and the skeletons contained of, you know, pretty much consisted of women's clothing and other misadventures of that sort.
Yep. Why don't we talk about the timeline leading up to his death, and then we can see what was found at the crime scene?
Sounds perfect.
That would lead to the women's clothing and all that. So DEF CON was in the first week of August 2010. So he returned home on August 11th, and that was the last day he spoke to his sister, and he was seen on CCTV shopping.
Mm-hmm.
On the 12th of August, he was again seen shopping. Apparently he made good money, because the next day, the 13th, he was also spotted on CCTV shopping. He said that on the 13th, he went to work, and then afterwards, he went to a show alone. It was for a drag queen named Johnny Wu. There's one of the first things that could potentially be a skeleton in his closet, but we don't know. And I don't know if he would consider it a skeleton, but just something he would be doing.
Personally, I wouldn't, but I'm not exactly sure how to describe it, you know?
It's a skeleton because it's a part of his life that no one knew anything about.
Yeah.
Apparently he was a very private man.
I heard that too.
He didn't have anyone come to his house that wasn't cleared by the SIS. Like, they had to have a background check.
Yep.
He didn't date. He would go have drinks at friends' houses, and his friends tended to be women, but yeah, he just basically stayed to himself, and he liked cycling. So that was what most people knew about him, was that he likes going cycling. So on the 14th, he went shopping again. The 15th was the last day he was seen alive. He bought some cakes and steaks, and he was last seen on CCTV entering his house at 3:05 p.m.
Nice.
On the 16th of August, the last computer evidence of him alive shows him looking at cycling time trials on a website. And he was due that day to lead a meeting with MI6 colleagues, but he did not show. He was absent all week, and MI6 did not report him missing. On the 20th, his employers at GCHQ, they were starting to get worried. Because they hadn't heard from him. So the HR, the human relations people, called the managers at MI6 and said, you know, we're worried about him. You might want to go check out his flat. If he's not there, you should probably call the police. MI6 didn't do anything.
Yeah.
On the 23rd, GCHQ, again, the government communications headquarters, who were his main employers, he was being loaned out to MI6.
Yes, yes.
So kind of like as a specialist, but his main employer was the GCHQ.
Yep.
They realized that nobody called the police, so they called himself. The cops did a welfare check. and went upstairs. His house had been locked from the outside.
Yep.
They went in and found the body in the North Face bag, which
yep.
is there. It's supposed to be like spill proof, tear proof.
Yeah. Nice and warm.
A pretty heavy duty bag.
Yeah.
And so the cops or the police that showed up said that it looked like all of his limbs had been cut off because they couldn't see him in the bag.
Yeah.
The way his body was
yep.
placed in the bag or how he got in the bag, depending on who you ask, it looks like he had no limbs.
Yep. Well, little bit of details is on this, like evidence and details wise, is he was found in his flat, which was an MI6 safe house. The heater was on, and this was, you know, the middle towards late August, which is summer. So, I mean, it was pretty warm. When they walked into the living room, there was like a small type kitchen table type thing right there. With some chairs around it, and on that table they found two SIM cards and a cell phone. And then on top of that, on the back of the corner of one of the chairs at that table, they found a red woman's wig. Then you keep walking a little bit, you turn around to your right, and actually in the living room, in front of one of the couches, where there's no coffee table, it was straight on the floor, there was a laptop computer and another cell phone found there on the floor. As we go into the spare bedroom had $26,000 worth of women's designer clothing and shoes, which is
20,000 pounds.
Which is, I really, really want to drop the F-bomb right now, but that is just a lot. That is a lot
of
money.
Mirror that amount of clothes in my house.
That is freaking insane. But as we walk into the master bedroom, the master bedroom was picked up. Bed was folded very neatly. There were clothes laying on the bed that were folded neatly, but there was also a woman's dressing gown that was strewn across the floor. And as we actually walked into the bathroom, that's where they found him in the red North Face bag in the tub. And they actually didn't know he was in it at first. They went to lift it up to pick it up out of there, and some red liquid seeped out. So that's when they cut a 3-inch hole in there and looked in there. And he was laying his body in the fetal position with legs crossed, arms on chest. And they made a point to say that his face was actually had a calm expression. So there was no like actual grotesque, like what they refer to as a death mask. He actually had a very calm look on his face.
See, and that's one thing that doesn't make sense to me. There were the two different stories. Like I said, they thought like his arms and legs had been cut off, but you just said he was in a fetal position, which I now remember reading somewhere else. But it could just be that the way they were placed while he was in the fetal position, maybe it looked like they were just thrown right on top of there.
Yeah, it could have. That's a good point, actually. Well, here's some of the not evidence that we have.
Say real quick.
No, please.
So they reported to, I guess, their superior, and in swept, here we go.
You're good.
MI5 agents went through Scotland Yard's counterterrorism command. They went through and did whatever they needed to do, got their top secret information out, and then released the flat back to the Homicide and Serious Crime Command. And when they got the crime scene back, there were no handles on the doors.
Yeah. So, yeah. A lot of weird stuff going on there. That is...
Well, they say that there was no sign of forced entry,
yep.
But we don't know because the agents took them off.
Exactly.
Okay, so you go ahead with the evidence. This is what I guess you're going to say what the police had found?
Yeah, the police and the coroner. The police, I'm probably going to go with more of what the coroner found. There were no fingerprints, no smudges, no kind of footprints, absolutely nothing.
No palm prints.
No palm prints, no nothing.
DNA.
Yep. They said there were small samples of DNA on the bag handles, and there was a little bit on one of the towels in the bathroom, and then there were two hairs underneath one of his thumbs. The best part about that is LGC Forensics, the company that handled the forensic evidence in this case, actually contaminated all the DNA evidence.
Whether, and they mislabeled it. On
and,
top of
yeah.
That.
like
so
it was
DNA
on purpose or something.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like it was on purpose or something. You know what I mean? It's like, how much can you screw something up?
Well, on purpose or just, like, completely incompetent.
Yeah, either or is pretty bad.
It ended up being the DNA of one of the evidence collectors.
Yeah, yep.
And I know that the DNA that was on the handles was not that of Gareth Williams.
Exactly. There were no marks on his body whatsoever. None whatsoever, which they did say, I did read a couple places, that sometimes the decomposition will kind of erase, not really erase, but kind of cover up or hide any kind of, like, I don't know if you want to put it, like, defensive wounds or anything like that, which is... One of the facts is why people believe that the heat in the apartment was turned up all the way while it was still summer, because...
And it makes it harder to determine the time of death.
Exactly.
Well.
And it helps speed up decomposition on a body as well. So
during the autopsy, the coroner did find... traces of GHB in his system,
yep.
But that naturally occurs in decomposition, and the amount found could be directly related to how the heat sped up the composition.
Exactly.
So that's a little tidbit from a theory later on, but
yeah,
just a little has to do with the heat.
Yeah, there's absolutely zero evidence. I mean, as of right now, the police still, they're pretty certain that they were not the first ones on the scene, because they said they have never really seen a crime scene that literally, you know, looked like it was wiped down intentionally. So, I mean, it's pretty interesting. There's not really much evidence to go on, with the exception of some of the ladies' garments and stuff in his apartment, which I guess will lead us probably into some of the facts about Gareth Williams and some of the things that were said about him.
Can we do what the coroner found out first?
Yes, please. Yes.
Okay, so the coroner's inquest found that his death was unnatural and likely to have been criminally meditated. Another Metropolitan Police reinvestigation concluded it was probably an accident. So we have one coroner saying, yeah, something's up, it's a crime, and another one saying, okay, it's probably an accident.
And I think they initially ruled it as a suicide, which...
Yeah.
Which is the craziest thing I've probably ever heard. And they actually did have a couple people try to do what he did, because of the fact that the two zippers on the bag were put together and they were padlocked. So they literally tried reenacting this a couple of times. And I hate...
Well, more than a couple. Yeah. I think between two different investigators, they tried over 400 times.
There you go. And
I could not. And then there was one person whose 16-year-old daughter did it, but that's a 16-year-old girl, not a
grown fit man.
Something man.
Yeah.
I mean, he was 5'8", and I guess slender but athletic because he was a cyclist.
He was a huge cyclist. But
still, you know, 16-year-old girl
does
not have the same kind of body as as a man.
No.
Man.
No, little different. But yeah, I don't know, it's pretty interesting, but
I do have another page here. So the coroner, her name was Dr. Fiona Wilcox, said that there were no injuries or signs of struggle.
Yep.
He was free of alcohol and common recreational drugs. Let's see. I know they ended up testing because of his clearance and access to classified materials, they did a batch of toxicological tests. They tested for 50 obvious and 50 rare poisons.
Yes.
They looked for rare isotopes, which is something that killed someone named Litvinenko.
Litvinenko. Radiation poisoning. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting case right there, yeah.
So they did test for specific things that could have, you know, he could have been exposed to or poisoned with, and did not seem to find any. They said, you know, in the absence of a specific direction, the possibilities are as limitless as a killer's imagination, and we cannot test for that.
Pretty much, especially with, I mean, even if he was poisoned, say, by like a needle or something, with that advanced decomposition, you know, within 7 days, is, you know, it's, you're not going to see any needle marks, more than likely, which is unfortunate. But
so are there other facts we can talk about before we go into
some theories?
Yeah, before, like, conjecture. Talk about the $20,000 collection.
Yeah, of designer women's clothing and shoes.
Yeah.
Well,
I know there were several different inquests. I'm not exactly sure how things work in the Great Britain area. As far as in America, when there is a murder and there are signs of foul play, basically an officer will call their sergeant, and the sergeant will be like, okay, well, is there this, this, and this present? Okay, we're going to send out detectives.
Yeah.
And so the officers there will rope everything off and talk to some witnesses that are there, and the detectives will do their thing and then tell officers what they need. From what I gather, I could be completely wrong, but, you know, on other sides of the ocean, we do things so differently.
And yeah.
It was hard for me to understand. But what I got was, in England, officers will go and they'll kind of do a preliminary investigation and get everything together and then bring it to a detective. And the detective will figure out whether or not to do an inquest.
Yeah.
And somewhere thrown in there, there's a coroner's inquest, which is different from the police inquest. Again, I'm not really sure, but there were several different inquests over the years.
There definitely has delving
into it.
And there's been.
Let me look at my timeline here. Let me see. I can't think of any other facts. Right, you go ahead and talk, and I'll jump in if I.
Okay.
If I can think of anything.
All right. Well, basically, some of the facts. was that Gareth Williams was notably unhappy at MI6, as noted by his family and some of his closest friends. It is said that he did not like the politics involved in the office type environment. He didn't like the drinking after work and the partying, and that goes back to him being a more private guy. He really didn't get into any of that stuff, and towards the end, I think it was
the rat race.
Yeah, and towards the end there, I think, what was it, like a week or a month before he passed away, he was actually trying to get back into his old apartment. He had talked to his old landlord, wanting to move back into his old apartment and basically get out of the safe house. He was pretty much just not happy at MI6. Couple other facts were that during the investigation, it was said that Gareth Williams had frequented a gay bar there in town, which was literally right beside where he was living in the safe house, from what I understand.
Yeah, I think he was in a more like homosexual friendly neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
That area.
Yeah.
Again, people from England, if I'm wrong, don't blame me, blame Justin.
Yeah.
Because this is his show.
Yeah, it's all my fault. I'll take the blame. Okay. But when they actually went to investigate that, they had asked the owner, the bartenders, and they all agreed that they had never seen him there before. So that goes back into maybe a little bit of that misinformation that goes along a lot with this case. The fact that he did have a red women's wig and all $26,000, 20,000 pounds worth of designer women and shoes in his apartment, along with the dress or the gown or whatever that was on his bedroom floor. You know, that's kind of, you know, it's kind of hard telling.
That someone said that the wig and the dress seem to be in the style of some manga character. I guess manga's like anime.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they thought that maybe there could be some cosplaying involved.
Huh.
In 2009, I believe it was, he did take some classes on fashion.
Yeah, yes, I forgot all about that. I'm glad you said something.
Yeah, if I can find the date or the year written down here, I can't. But he did take fashion classes.
Huh.
The clothing could have something to do with, I don't know why he was killed. It could not. I know that the Metropolitan Police did a big part of their investigation on whether or not he was gay.
Yes, they did.
And they found that they thought he was, but that it had nothing to do with the investigation. You know, they have to do like a victim profile to see what risk factors there could be. But they found ultimately that he was gay. Whether he was or not is still unknown. His family completely denies it.
Yeah. There's one of his closest friends that she even, in an interview, she's like, you know, if he was going to open up to anybody about anything, it would have been me. And he never once said that he was either a cross-dresser or a homosexual. So, I don't know. You know.
She assumed that he was probably going to end up giving her the clothes.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I've got friends, but I don't have friends that are going to give me that much money worth of clothes.
I know, right? It's like, just give me the cash. I don't need the clothes, man. You know, I buy my own stuff. But it was pretty weird, yeah. Another thing, too.
To a theory, he apparently had another passport.
Yes.
And was preparing to preparing another identity.
Yep.
And yep. That's what his family was told. However, his family didn't know what he did. They just knew that he worked at the GCHQ. But they knew no details about anything that he did.
Yeah.
But yet they knew that he had another passport and was going to, I guess, have another identity. That just seems kind of weird. So one of the theories out there is that perhaps he was going to have this other identity and be a woman.
Yeah. And that is too.
But that, I still don't see what that would have to do with his death. But that's.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. With that being said, I guess I think we got pretty much all the details. There is one detail that I found interesting, and I only saw it. I saw it in a couple places, and it was basically saying that when they did the search on his computer, had actually found websites that he had visited that was related to bondage sex, and there was actually a story out there about his neighbors.
Oh, the landlord.
Yeah, his landlord. Yeah, because they heard him yelling for help, right? And they go up and they find him handcuffed to his bed. And
yeah, in his underwear.
In his underwear.
To his bed. They had to help him out, and I remember the woman said, like, oh, he promised us that he was just trying to see if he could, and he would never do it again.
Yeah.
He promised he would never do it again.
Yeah.
That was just kind of a little.
Yeah. Because I had heard he had told her that he was practicing escaping out of handcuffs, and
I think this came out in the second inquest, which was in 2012.
Yeah.
His death being in 2010. This came out, I think, later, like March, April, May of 2012.
Yeah.
So,
well, in all honesty, with like as much heat as was on this case, like when it first happened, I don't know, man. I might be scared to come up, you know, up front and say something like that, like right out the get go. You know what I mean? Because I don't know, man. That's.
The way it was worded in the article, it just kind of maybe made it seem like she was saying it for the attention.
Ah, yeah. That's
like,
a very good possibility,
though.
I can't
imagine him being like, oh, I promise I'll never do it again.
Yeah,
seems like something,
No, that's a really good point right there, actually.
Older person it seems like an older person's kind of language. No offense, older people.
Yeah.
But I can't see. You know, he's like my age when he died. I can't see like a 30-something-year-old saying, oh, landlady, I promise I'll never do it again.
Yeah, I mean, a 30-something-year-old would probably slip her like a couple $100 and be like, hey, don't tell anybody, all right? Yeah, it's like different strokes for different folks. We all get into different stuff, you know. But
going back to the bondage website.
Yeah.
There were rumors that, you know, he frequented the websites a lot, but later inquest shows that the amount of times he went there was so minuscule and there was no pattern. It didn't show that it was something that he would have an interest in.
Exactly. Exactly.
It could have just been like, you know, a pop-up, you click it and it takes you to a bondage website. Who knows?
It could be. Maybe he was on an anime site and it led him to there. Yeah.
And so the theory that this was somehow bondage gone wrong, as far as what I know about bondage, doesn't have anything to do with being locked in bags.
No, but there actually is this thing, and it's called claustrophilia. And it's where you literally get sexually aroused by being trapped in a confined space. I did read that.
Yeah, but I read about that too, and they said there was no evidence that he was into that.
Exactly,
and that
exactly.
Also has nothing to do with bondage.
No, it does not.
The description of the crime scene to me, it seemed very, very staged.
It seems extremely staged.
From what others have said of him was that he was a minimalist. Everything was neat and in its place.
Yep.
And so for the crime scene just to have all of these like clothes laying out, unless he was in the process of getting dressed, who knows? Yeah. So in my head, I've ruled out the bondage theory.
Yeah, and the actual from the crime scene photos, which I will post on the Facebook page along when I post this episode.
You found crime scene photos? Because I didn't.
I got a few. Anywhere. Yeah, I got a few, and it sucks because I'm probably gonna have to take screenshots of like a YouTube video that I watched. But there, if you look at the bed, the clothes that are stacked up on the bed, it's like three or four pairs of pants, like three or four shirts. So, I mean, I agree with you. It seemed really staged. They were just
laid out, or they folded?
Very neatly folded.
So perhaps he could have been packing to leave.
That's a good possibility.
To go to the other landlord.
It's a very good possibility.
The other place where he had lived before.
Yeah, which he was wanting to go back to pretty badly.
So another theory is the police believed there could have been a jealous lover.
Yeah.
That they were jealous that he went to the drag club by himself and not with them, and somehow convinced him to get in a bag and locked him in. Oh, there's another one that I just forgot. At one point, the police were looking for a Mediterranean couple that had been seen on the CCTV.
Really?
Entering his building.
I have not heard
that. Anything about that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, so I don't know how many units were in his building.
I was kind of wondering that too, because it doesn't look like very many.
But from what I gather, there's like the main entrance on the bottom floor, and mm-hmm. then you can go up from there. So there were cameras there, and there was a Mediterranean couple, and they couldn't link them to anybody else in the building. They posted the pictures everywhere, and they could not find them there.
And they were a couple, like a man and a woman?
Yeah.
Huh.
I they say like a couple. I don't know if they mean like they were together as a couple, or they were just two people there, like
okay.
a couple of people.
Okay.
But it was a man and a woman. They thought that somehow like they put him in the bag, and they were going to use the bag to like take the body out of the apartment, but couldn't like pick it up, and that's so why he was in the bag and left there. But they never found anything about the Mediterranean couple. I don't know why they linked.
Well, I tell you what, while you tell me that, that actually makes me think of another theory. Was that, and this is honestly, this is my favorite one. I'm just going to throw this out there. Is that, like, for some reason, which I don't think we will ever know, they said it was actually at least two people that had poisoned and or drugged him and then stuffed him in the bag, in which case, as long as the poison or whatever sedative it might have been would last long enough, it would only take about, they said, 20 to 30 minutes to actually suffocate in that bag closed. And they also know that because the key to the padlock was found underneath his body, there was no real way that he could actually have locked himself in there. So, I mean,
well, you don't necessarily need a key to close a padlock. I mean, that, some, you know, that you do.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I did not think
and
about that.
And some that you don't. But you would think, like, going back to the theory that, like, he did it himself.
Yeah, I don't see it.
I think you would keep it in your hand. And it's, like, a super, super small bag.
It is, too. It's not
big at
all.
You wouldn't just, like, throw the key in the bottom and then be like, oh, I'm going to somehow wiggle around and then get the key and somehow, you know, poke open the zipper and then unlock it. And
yeah.
And him doing it himself just seems like extremely unlikely to me. The drug that you were talking about, that brings us back to the GHB, which could or could not be at a level that was consistent with decomposition.
Yeah.
So if he was put in the bag, it could have been the GHB, because...
And for those of you who don't... Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, GHB is referred to as the date rape drug. So...
If anybody has had surgery before, there's something called Versed, which, at least to me, I call it the date rape drug. And basically, what Versed does and what GHB does is it makes it so your body can't, or your mind can't create new memories.
Yep.
So whatever is happening to you, you know, you, it happens and you have no idea. You could be on it and be interacting with people and have absolutely no recollection of it.
Exactly.
But there's also like a sedative part to it. So if you're awake and doing something, you'd be, to my understanding, again, I don't mean for you to get emails saying Kim's wrong, ruin the whole thing, but yeah, it does have a sedative effect.
It
Which
does.
Is why people use it to help them rape people.
Yeah, and that...
Do not rape people. Do not use GHB. We do not endorse using the GHB for rape or rape. I think I covered you legally right there.
I'm pretty sure you did, and I appreciate that so much, because I'm not going to be like, oh, it's okay, Justin said it's fine. You know, it'll be okay. It's like, I don't need people saying any of that.
I never would have raped a woman if I hadn't listened to this podcast.
I know. He told me all about it. But yeah, I mean, that kind of goes with my thing. I think they wanted to purposely, whoever went in there and did this, wanted to purposely speed up the decomposition so that no matter what, the GHB, in theory, would show up.
Yeah.
The fact that there's no defensive wounds and his face was calm, it leads me to believe that he was not alive when he was put in the bag. I'm not even 100% sure if he was even at the safe house when he was put in the bag, to be honest with you.
And going back to that, oh, what did you say it was? The claustrophilia?
Yeah, claustrophilia.
If you go back to that theory and thinking of him, like, putting himself in the bag, if he's all aroused and everything, I don't think he would have a calm expression.
No. He'd be stuck with an O-face. For life, okay? For, like, eternity. Nobody, I mean, we all want to go out that way, but, you know, not with the expression on your face. Yeah, it'd be pretty embarrassing. Another popular theory is the Russian theory.
Yes. I found out quite a bit about him.
Good.
You could have another whole podcast.
Yeah.
Another whole podcast about him.
Well, I actually, I was doing a bunch of research on a guy named Alexander Solonik, who is the super killer, basically. He was an assassin back in the day in Russia. I think he died in like the late 90s or early 2000s or something. And the reason I found out about this Russian is because of him, because he actually had a couple of ties into that too. But sorry to interrupt. I just had to point that out. It was pretty interesting about that. But tell us about this Russian man.
So in 2015, Boris Kurpichkov came out, and he was a former KGB agent who defected from Russia once his status as a double agent was revealed.
Yep.
So once he was outed, he defected to Britain, Great Britain, or whoever is part of Great Britain, or the whole Brexit thing, I don't know. He's in some area that once was called Great Britain.
Okay.
Or the United Kingdom, or I'm so...
Yeah, we can call it... No, it's all right. No, we'll just call it the UK, I guess. I think that's fair enough.
So he stated during interviews that he had sources and the Russian Foreign Intelligence Service, which is known as the SVR, which is formerly the KGB.
Which the KGB was dissolved for quite a long time before he supposedly had worked for him, I believe. I don't know the timeline on what he was saying about working for the KGB. I remember it didn't line up because it had already been dissolved. I mean, supposedly, quote-unquote.
Well, yeah, supposedly dissolved, but I think they just renamed it to the SVR.
Okay, well, that would make sense.
You know, they're trying to distance themselves from the shady shit they did many moons ago. So he said that Gareth was killed in retaliation for not wanting to become a double agent.
Mm-hmm.
So according to him, there was a mole in the GCHB known as Orion.
Mm-hmm.
GCHB, GCHQ. And the GCHQ known as Orion. And Orion befriended Gareth Williams and introduced him to a third party, Lucas. And so Lucas was at DEF CON, which was the convention that Gareth went to the week before he died, with him. And I guess they went to a club. And apparently they got so, like, buddy-buddy, chummy-chummy that he, Gareth told him about his cropped dress thing and that he went to gay nightclubs and so tried to blackmail him with this.
Mm-hmm.
They spiked his drink and he passed out and they took him to some house in Vegas and they staged photos of him naked in bed with a man and a woman, and they put ecstasy in his pocket.
Huh.
And so they tried to blackmail him into being a double agent because right before he died, apparently he had been working on some, it was something to do with Russian money laundering.
Oh, yeah.
So they tried to get him to be a double agent with Russia and he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. And they're like, crap. Well, now he knows that there's another double agent here, so we're going to kill him so that they won't out, you know, this guy, Orion.
Yeah.
And so they injected an undetectable poison into his ear.
Hmm.
And apparently the poison would, there would be no trace of it soon after it was metabolized. Or something like that.
Okay.
The coroner said it was a really good theory, but there's no evidence to support it.
Which,
so,
yeah.
I remember you had saying that you thought it had been debunked, but from where I researched, I couldn't find anything about it being debunked. So
yeah.
Can you tell me your knowledge of that?
Well, actually, I had read that it was debunked by probably not the best news source in the world. That would be the Daily Mail. Okay, you know, tabloids aside, it is actually an extremely good theory. My whole thing, though, is after Vegas, he actually went on vacation for at least a few days before returning back to England. So, it kind of begs the question, like, why would all this go down? Try to get bribed into being a double agent and then him go on vacation. You know, you would think he would honestly, like, hurry up and get home. But
no, I mean, we don't know if it could have been, like, the day that he was leaving.
That's true.
That it happened.
That is true.
Maybe they're like, oh, take a night and, like, think it over. Maybe they went back to their superiors and they're like, no.
Yeah, he's not gonna do
it. You can't let him do it. You gotta go kill him.
Yeah.
And apparently, this Boris Karpichkov. He died of what some say was a mysterious death.
Yes, he did. Like you were saying, there could be a whole nother episode about this freaking guy, man. It's really intriguing.
They said that he went out into, like, the mountains or the forest and took a bunch of pills and slit his wrists.
Yeah, he,
and some people are like, no, he didn't do that, but, and there was even an investigation, like a special commission.
Yeah.
I can't think of. There was a commission that they put together after JFK was shot.
Yeah, it was like it would be comparable to the Warren Commission, right?
That's it. Yeah.
Yep.
So and they found no proof of that, but apparently this guy Boris was one who would turn people into double agents.
Yes, he was a very intriguing guy. He was a straight up spy, pretty much. He was the definition of the word. Let's say we can always go into one of the other theories where MI6 had found out that he was a crossdresser and planning to get a sex change and had him taken out because of that. I read it and I was like, I just don't see that happening, because actually when all this went down was right around the time that I don't know if you remember Chelsea Manning, the young guy from the Army who I believe is now in prison. He was getting ready, I think his original name, he was like Bradley Manning or something like that. He got that sex change and now he's Chelsea Manning. Yeah, he's in prison now, but this was about the time that was going on. And basically Great Britain or England or the UK, they didn't want to face the embarrassment and criticism that pretty much happened to America, so they went ahead and had him taken out. But if that theory was true, they probably would have cleaned the shit up out of his house.
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Ludicrous that is. If you're like a secret intelligence agency and you have all of these weapons and like secrets at your disposal, would you really leave a man in a bag, in a bathtub, in an apartment
for a week, you know?
For a week, and have it be such a big case that ended up being bungled so badly and just brought so much more attention to MI6. That's something we didn't talk about. There were a few other things that they had bungled. Crap, I can't find it right now. But yeah, like, if you're in the government and you want to take somebody out, you can just make the body disappear.
Exactly. It's just, there's no reason to do it that way if that was the case. And of course, I'm pretty sure we both agreed the suicide theory is pretty much out.
Yeah.
And
as far as like the cross-dressing being an embarrassment, the head of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, he was a cross-dresser. We didn't care.
Yeah.
Well, at least I don't think we cared. I wasn't alive then.
Yeah, now, there was no social media back then either, so... I will say this, though. A very interesting fact is that he supposedly, according to MI6, was not a very important person, from what they say. I mean, and not in a disrespectful way of not being an important person, but
yeah,
in
he
the
was like mid-level.
He was like mid-level, but the head of the MI6 himself showed up to his funeral.
Yeah, apparently a lot of them did, or supposedly, because they all went in the back door to protect their identity. So, I mean, I don't know if the family flat out said that they showed up. It could all be conjecture or lies, saying, oh yeah, they all showed up, but you didn't see them because they went in the back door.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. And the only thing I did read, I don't know, I heard that there was the head of the MI6, and I can't remember his freaking name. It's like Sir Sawyers or something like that at the time. I can't remember. I should have wrote that down. But
I think I do have it written down, but I told you, like 20 pages in this, and they're not in order. So.
Oh, no, it's fine. But they say that he showed up. They do know that. I mean, it was documented. But they also said that he showed up with five other individuals who could not be identified or named, who were supposedly of, you know, pretty good importance, you would think. But and then that brings up the whole thing of, if this guy was mid-level that never really worked on anything truly top secret or important, why is the head of the MI6 at his funeral? Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Personally,
well,
I think.
It could be because it was in the news that MI6 was involved. You know, the GCHQ was involved. One thing we didn't bring up earlier is that the American government had went and got a court order saying that none of the information relating to what he did with America could be released to anyone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could have had a hand in his death, who knows, but because so many agencies were involved and it was so, like, out in the news, it could just be because, you know, they had all this pressure on them.
Yeah.
Or it could be because he was an awesome guy and he was a genius and the nicest
that
man,
right
according
there
to his family.
Yeah.
It could just be because he was a really cool dude.
That could have been too, you know. It's hard telling, to be honest with you, and it's a shame because everything I, like you had just said, I mean, the guy was just crazy smart, you know what I mean? And his family and everybody that actually knew him, you know, with the exception of him being private, which is fine, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but everybody that actually knew him personally just spoke very highly of him. I mean, they didn't have...
He was the sweetest
man,
the most caring, he put everybody else first.
Yep. And at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, looking into some of this stuff can get depressing sometimes. But you always got to pay due diligence, you know?
There's one theory that we forgot.
Yeah, what's up?
Absolute favorite. In the month that he died, it is fact that he had angered his bosses at the Secret Intelligence Service.
Yeah.
By getting the confidential information regarding a guest list of events that the president of the United States, Bill Clinton,
I remember that now.
And I know that, you know, there was the Clinton death trail.
Oh, yeah.
I am fans of all the Clinton conspiracies.
I am too, actually. I've wasted months of my life reading about that stuff.
I'm not a fan of the Clintons.
Yeah.
Let me just put that out there. So,
I always try to keep my opinions to myself because I don't want people to hate me or blow up my email, you know?
Okay, well, this is mine. If you can figure out my email, which you can go ahead and email me. But I'm not a fan of the Clintons from the information that I know. And it is my opinion.
There is some.
It's fact that, you know, they're horrible people, in my opinion.
There's a lot of facts out there surrounding the Clintons. And for those of you who have never really dived into it too much, it's very, very interesting. And it's very scary.
The Primary Colors. That's about the Clintons.
Is it? Never seen it.
Yes.
Might have to check that out.
It has to do with, like, his campaign trail.
Oh, yeah.
Affairs that he had.
Well, and we did me and my buddy on here did an episode about a couple young guys down there in Arkansas that got killed. And at the time, Bill Clinton was actually governor. Yeah, totally messed that up. Yeah. and it was big. It's still a huge drug conspiracy. It's called, you know, referred to as the MENA connection. But yeah, that is a very, very popular theory right there.
Yeah, so to get off of my opinions and assumptions, so don't lose listeners. So yeah, the theory is that Bill Clinton had him killed because the guest list of the event that he was attending was, which was confidential, was, I guess, taken and given to someone.
Yep. That's exactly.
So, you know, there isn't, you know, much that I could see, like, oh, that means he must be killed, but
I don't see it.
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, with the Clintons, that is true. Who knows? Because if, like we were saying, if you ever have time, just literally, if you type into a Google search engine, mysterious circumstances, I'm pretty sure, like, I know my podcast is probably one of the few up there, but literally the Clinton body count is top.
Google, for that. Google has been known to filter their search, their search returns. So go to Bing.
Bing. That would make sense. Internet Explorer.
Or any other one, because Google does filter their search results. Yeah,
it is extremely intriguing. If you want to dive into a really deep rabbit hole, this podcast could actually do an episode on every single one of those people.
At least one episode.
It is freaking interesting. But so all in all, Kimberly, what is your favorite theory, and what do you think happened?
Well, like I just said, my disdain for the Clintons. I don't have a favorite theory. I honestly don't know what happened, and it's so frustrating that there's so much rumor and conjecture just random useless information thrown here, and people are losing sight of the fact that this was a young man whose life was cut short tragically.
A very talented and bright young man who... I totally agree.
I guess what the conclusion was by, like, Scotland Yard and the coroner's inquest, they're basically like, we don't know, but the most possible scenario is that he died alone as a result of accidentally locking himself inside the bag.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could do that accidentally, but like I said, I honestly don't know. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the Mediterranean couple, nothing came of that, but they could have been working for someone, maybe Bill Clinton.
Maybe.
And was put there. I don't think the women's clothing has anything to do with it.
Yeah.
That could just be a red herring.
I think it was just planted, to be honest with you.
Well, he did go to... They did have receipts for all the clothing. And he was shopping in the days before he died. And so they do have receipts.
They do have the receipts. That is right. I forgot about that.
Showing that it was his. So, it could have been, like, a cosplay or whatever, but...
Yeah, maybe it was for a friend. Who knows? Yeah.
Anything to do with it, whether he was gay or not, has nothing to do with it.
I agree. I do
maybe
think...
Maybe he cheated at cycling and someone got pissed. I don't know why I never looked into cycling, because cycling is, like, his big thing, but that's not really a risk factor.
Yeah, I don't see that being it. Yeah.
I have no idea, and it's really frustrating. I'd like to have at least some kind of notion of what happens, but I don't, and I don't think we ever will.
I agree. I definitely think he was either drugged or sedated before he was put in the bag.
Oh yeah,
because of that, I do think it would take more than one person to get his body in the bag that way. But as for who did it and why, I honestly do not think we will ever know, because there's so much that this guy was into that was top secret. I don't think all the details will be fully disclosed, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not sure. I guess we'll leave it up to the listeners to decide what they think happened, and we did our job and give them some facts and some theories and stuff, so...
Yeah, so despite his horrible death, and we will never know, I just want to bring up one thing that we did say before, but to point it out, that he helped save millions of American lives.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did.
With the
NSA.
Stopping the bombs coming on the airplanes.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm just trying to humanize him a bit, because
he's
so enamored by the details.
Exactly,
they forget there's a person there.
Exactly, and he was a, like we were both saying, a bright, talented guy who literally did save many, many people's lives without anybody even knowing it.
Yeah, and he may have not even realized it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, he seems like the kind of person that... He seems very humble from the things that I read about.
That's pretty much same as me. It's about the same, yeah. All right, well, I guess that should probably wrap up our episode. Kimberly, did you have fun?
Thanks for letting me talk about this with you.
Hey, no problem. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did. It was very nerve-wracking in the beginning.
But once you get going, it's all right.
I hope it made sense. Yeah. Because we had all this information together, and we're talking about it. And it's like, wait, people that are listening don't necessarily know the things we know. So I'm just hoping we got it across.
Yeah.
Without it sounding like people are just eavesdropping on the conversation that we're having.
No, I think we did pretty good. We laid it out in a good timely, you know, good timeline, and we put all the facts and details that we actually knew along with the theories, and that's pretty much how you do it. So I don't know. I appreciate you deciding to do this, even though you were pretty nervous. I think it turned out pretty well.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you letting me do this. I think it's cool that you're letting listeners do this with you.
Oh, hey, you guys are all into the same stuff I am. I listen to podcasts all day at work, you know, so I'm right there with everybody else.
What's your favorite, if you don't mind me asking, like going off topic, what's your favorite?
My favorite podcast, it varies, like from month to month, but there is a podcast called Most Notorious that I literally never miss. It is, it's not really Unsolved Mysteries or anything like that. It's a guy who interviews authors, and the authors are writing books about different historical people. I get into that one pretty immensely. I mean, last week's episode was about, it was a two-parter about Pretty Boy Floyd back in the gangster days, and they were interviewing a gentleman who had written a book about him. But that is, right now, that is my favorite podcast. But I'm a huge Thinking Sideways fan. I love The Vanished.
Generation Y is one of mine. I mean, this one would have to be my favorite, the one I'm on now.
Oh, but, you ain't got to butter my bread. We're done with the episode. You can tell me how much you hate me now. No, I like Generation Y too. I don't think
Curiosity Kills.
Yeah, definitely. There's literally so many of them out there. I mean, if you can't find at least five favorites, you're looking in the wrong place. You know.
Maybe if we keep listing them off, one of them will mention yours on their show.
Well, here's what I've come to find out about other podcasts is they never, ever give credit to any other podcasts, whether it's their egos or they don't want to lose listeners or something like that of that nature. But I have always noticed that I'm like literally the only one who will come out and talk about other podcasts and in their episodes and how much I like them. But
I have noticed that there's one, I can't remember. Is this, it might be up in Banish.
Oh, that's a good one.
Where they do point out other podcasts.
Nice. I've heard
you can like delete this from the recording.
No, you're fine. No, I True Crime Garage does, but usually what they'll do is, I do too, I love that podcast. But what they'll do is they have podcast networks, and all the podcasts in that network help promote each other, you know, like little networking superstars. And it's like, I'm not part of a network, and I'm trying to keep advertisements and sponsors off of this podcast. So I don't, you know.
I mean, you do this. We're trying to do it every 2 weeks, and
yeah,
just for this one episode that I'm doing with you, I put in like 3 weeks on this one thing, and it was so much. I don't know how you do it on a consistent basis. I mean,
it's
you put a lot of work into it. You said that you work all week.
Yeah,
and then
I work a lot of hours.
You have your kids, and then you're up doing this late at night. You know, maybe you should get paid for it. That's just me.
It'd be okay.
Why do something for free if you can get paid for it?
Yeah, I'm like, you didn't get to hear the pre-recording stuff I recorded beforehand, but actually here after the new year, I'm going to try. Me and a young lady named Lacey are working on designs for t-shirts and stuff like that. That'll help keep the advertisements and stuff off of the podcast, so I think that'd be pretty cool. But, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, like You know, I was thinking about doing like a premium content episode, which would be a huge long episode that'll cost maybe like a buck or two, you know, something simple. But
there is that that one website thing that a lot of the podcasts refer to where people make the donation.
Oh, yeah.
So you can make a monthly donation.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, I actually am. I always disregard telling people because I'm not about begging for money, but... I am on patreon.com, patreon, and just type in slash mysterious circumstances, and there is it's a monthly recurring donation, so I don't do it by episode. But yeah, if you would like to donate to the show, it helped me get some better equipment, and like I said, definitely keep advertisements and sponsors, little fingers out of this podcast. But yeah, I am on there. I always neglect to mention that. So, but yeah, I guess. Thank you again, Kim, for being on the podcast. You did a phenomenal job.
Sorry for blabbering on.
No, you're totally fine. No, you're totally fine. I blabber on all the time. It's just nobody else is here to hear me say it, and I edit the shit out, so. But I suppose until next week, when Tanya is going to be joining me, we'll be doing, I'm pretty sure, what will be considered our very first paranormal episode, which I am extremely stoked about, because we do everything mysterious on this show, not just the murders and disappearances, so. Thank you again, Kimberly. You did a phenomenal job. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
I will talk to you again. I will let you know some of the reviews that come in. I will talk to you later.
Oh, good Lord.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye.